Thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's Tuesday, Hour 1. Our friend Karen Lyle is back with us for Salesport.com. How are you, Karen?
I am doing great today.
Good to hear. Let's get right to our first guest. That is Sandy Svoboda, and she is a member on the all-women's team that finished eighth in her class in the J-105 Phantom in Division I. Cove Island, the Bell's Beer Bayview Mackinac race, the 95th running of the longest consecutively held freshwater race in the country up there in Lake Huron. And Sandy, let's start off by just asking, what is the Lake Huron like? What kind of personality does that lake have? Because I would imagine it's probably not too friendly.
Oh, it can be friendly. It can be mean. It can be warm. It can be cold. It has like multiple personalities, and you never know what you are going to get in the Bell's Beer Baby Mackinac race.
So, Sandy, how many all women's teams are there in the Mac race?
Well, we were the only one this year. We had seven women. We were aboard a boat called Phantom, which was owned by Cynthia and Jim Best. We kicked Jim off. No, I'm just kidding. He voluntarily sailed on another boat and left it with his wife, Cynthia. There have been a few other teams over the years, but it's pretty rare. I just heard of one in the last couple years that did the shorter race course. There's two courses in the Bell's Beer Bayview Mackinac race. One goes up the shoreline of Michigan, the state of Michigan and Lake Huron. The other one goes sort of northeast over to Canada and then across the top of Lake Huron. So it's two legs. We did the longer one. There was an all-women's team in the early to mid-80s that was pretty famous at the time because that was one of the roughest races that ever happened, and they finished it, unlike a lot of other boats.
So for this particular race, it's not like you have half women racing. It's pretty rare.
Well, there are women that sail on different boats. I can't guess the percentage, but it's rare to have an all-women's team. It's rare to have a majority women's team. There are women that race. You know, a lot of us race, you know, several times a week. We race on mixed crews. We race in all-women's events. We actually have a women's national event coming up in Detroit in a couple of weeks, the Baby Yacht Club. But, it's definitely unusual to have all women doing the Mackinac race.
You know, and you start off in the lower part of the lake and you go up to Mackinac Island, which, for people who don't know, it's right in between the Mitten and the Uper there in Michigan, almost up there in Canada. do you get off and you have drinks at Fort Mackinac? What's the tradition after the race?
Well, different people have different traditions. There are definitely some beverages consumed. We had a mix. We had a little champagne waiting for us at the dock. And then Bell's Beer, of course. They are our lead race sponsor. And you have to support the sponsor. Plus, I might say, it's really good beer. It's brewed in Michigan, in central Michigan. And so that, you know, has become a tradition for everybody. Bell's has really become incorporated into a lot of our sailing traditions. Yeah, you still find the occasional rum drinker. Some of the stereotypes about sailors are true. there's also a lot of family traditions, too. You see a lot of people joined by their families, and then they make a week out of it in northern Michigan and enjoy a lot of the recreation of the Great Lakes. Not only Mackinac Island, but other parts of that area are just beautiful.
What was the wind like in this particular race that you were in? Did you have a lot of shifting of directions and having to respond to that?
Yeah, not only shifting of direction of the wind, but the strength of the wind. So people have asked me how this race compares to others that I've done, and it was definitely mentally and physically harder, not because we were all women, but because of the changing of the wind, the changing of the weather. We had times where we were going backwards, right at the finish line, where everyone could see us. The wind just died, and people were watching on the island as we just started to drift backwards a little bit. And then we had times where we were in a storm where we saw some of the highest winds of the race, about 40 miles an hour. And I've talked to friends on other boats, and they did not see wind that high. So I really do think we were in some of the highest winds during a storm on Saturday night. So, you know, we had the wind, different directions, different strength. It really required thinking about what we were doing and kind of what our next move was in terms of the sail plan and where we put the boat navigationally.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Sandy Svoboda. A couple more questions about the Bell's Beer Bayview Mackinac race. You know, when you're such an experienced sea person as you are, what are some of the things that you learn from this race? Because I guess you're always learning, and if you're not open-minded, you could get caught with your pants down, so to speak, right?
Sometimes literally, yeah. Changing clothes on the boat and a wind hits, you know, a wave hits you the wrong direction, you fall across the cabin. That can, things like that can be a little embarrassing and challenging. But no, you're right. I mean, I think one of the things that's really nice about the race and our team really is that it's, you take multiple people, right? So you have to work as a team, but you also have the ability to have people who are less experienced as well as really experienced sailors on the boat. We had that. You know, we had 61 Mackinac races between us, at least, six of us. One person, this was her first one. So it was really nice to be able to experience the race for the first time with her, you know, as it was her first race and how, what she was seeing and thinking and feeling, and then everybody telling her it was never going to be better because we really did have a great team. And I think that's another lesson. You know, you can go, this was not the best finish I've ever had in a sailboat race. Let's put it that way. All of us on the boat have won regattas. We've won national championships. We've competed at some pretty high levels. But I think everybody universally agreed that this was one of their favorite sailing experiences because of the way that the team bonded, the way that we did respond, that we didn't break anything. You know, I heard there were 20 boats that dropped out of this race, and that's almost 10% of the fleet, and we were not one of them. So, you know, I think another lesson is that in sports, here's my sports metaphors, right? I think in sports, in recreational sports and competitive sports that us mere mortals can be part of, you know, we all have day jobs. Most of the sailors in the Bell's Beer Baby Mackinac race are not professionals, but we can still go out there and come together as a team and accomplish something in a very friendly, healthy, competitive spirit that I just, you know, you don't find that in a lot of other avenues in our busy lives.
So that is a really great experience that you've had there with the Bayview, the Mac race. Actually, what would you say was the most significant bonding that you had with your team on this race?
I'm not sure I can mention that on the radio. There were some stories told from our lives that I hope stay on the boat.
What happens in the Mac stays in the Mac?
But, you know, that is an overused slogan, but in this case, it applies.
I'm not going to share with the 82 million people here, huh?
Yeah. No, we made promises. You know, you got to honor your bond with your teammates about their stories. It does speak to, you know, what's involved in sports and that it creates bonds and friendship that we just don't get in all the other avenues of our lives. You know, sometimes with work, it's about the company or the profit, and not that those things are bad, but when you're really doing something for the pure love of the sport and the bonding that you have with your team and the sense of accomplishment, when you pull into this beautiful harbor on Mackinac Island where there's horses going by and tourists wondering what the heck is going on with all these smelly sailors coming in, and your friends and family greet you at the dock, and you go to the awards ceremony, and everybody's just so pumped at each other's accomplishments. It's a very unique experience that you've accomplished something physically, competitively, mentally, meteorologically in some cases because the weather is involved. It's just such a unique sport that I think, you know, not people don't realize how actually accessible sailing is in our country, really, the coast and the inland lakes and especially the Great Lakes. You know, a lot of people can get into sailing, and I wish there was a way to get more people involved.
Last question for you. We just have about a minute. Is there a holy grail type of race that you're looking at, or is what's the goal for you on the high seas?
Well, you know, I have ticked off a few of them in my sailing career, but I'm gonna get another one of them this weekend. I'm participating in the Trans Superior race, which goes from east to west across Lake Superior. It's a little bit longer. Probably a lot colder. I'm going on a bigger boat, so it might be a little bit faster. So that's definitely one that I have not done. I'd like to win another national championship at some point, and I would definitely like to do an ocean crossing, but that's going to be a few years out.
All right, very cool. We've been speaking with Sandy Svoboda, and do you have a website or anything or anywhere we can go to find out more, or what are you pushing, anything agenda like that?
Well, I got a couple things. Bayview Yacht Club is the club that puts on the race. Our website is byc.com. Mm-hmm. And on there you can actually find out things about Learn to Sail programs. It would help people Google in their own neighborhoods if they're looking for lessons around the country. And then my day job is, I'm lucky enough to have a day job where I wrap into the Great Lakes. I'm the program director for an initiative called Great Lakes Now, which is public television stations around the Great Lakes region. So greatlakesnow.org. We have a YouTube channel as well, so you can see where I have the best job. I get to blend my work and some of my hobbies and love for the Great Lakes.
Great stuff, Sandy. We really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll catch up down the road.
All right. Thank you so much. And tell your next guest, Bill Martin, that we got to have a bet on the Trans-Superior race because he's doing that one, too.
All right. Sounds good. I'm Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle. Come on back on Sports Byline.
This is Karen Lyle with a music and sports spotlight. This was actually the spotlight that started SailSportTalk.com. I was interviewing Chris Tedesco at the Los Angeles Yacht Club because he was the trumpet player for the LA Chargers.
You're doing a lot of work in your studio.
Yes,
because
home
you're a session musician and you're a composer and arranger and a musical director.
Yeah.
You're doing that by yourself oftentimes. So what is it like for you going out and being in the middle of this game with all these fans and these people and these skilled players out there?
There's nothing like it. It's like, you know, what I do is pretty easy. Like, okay, ladies and gentlemen, not a Chargers first down, Melvin Gordon, 24 yards. Da, 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 da. Do you know the hardest part of that gig? It's actually remembering to turn on my mic switch. I have an on-off, like the referees, when they, you know, you watch the game and the ref has to switch it on to talk, to call the play. I got a little switch, same little toggle switch. And there has been times when I forgot the switch, okay? And then I get the text, hey, dude, where's your fanfare? Oops, forgot the switch. The actual playing of the fanfare is not hard. Da-da-da-da-da-da, charge, da-da-da-da-da-da, charge. You crack a note, people are like, oh boy. You know, so you're in front of like 27,000 people, so you got to play strong, right? You got to know that. The difference between going and doing that, you're on, I don't know, not 27,000 people are just watching the Bugler. But because you're in the public, because the other thing, like, I can do tracks in my studio in my jammies, and nobody cares what I look like as long as I get their trumpet solo.
Right.
Like if you needed a trumpet solo by the end of the day, when I go home, I'll turn on my Pro Tools, I'll do a solo for you. You get the trumpet solo. You don't care what I look like. So it's the 180 of sitting at home doing tracks. So you're out there. It's like a horse being let out of the gate. It's like me being released because you're going to react in front of people. It's great. It's totally great. And the playoff game we did where the Baltimore Ravens came and kicked our butt on a Saturday night. The place was electric. And it was national TV, Saturday night game. And there's news anchors there. And there's people looking at me like, you know, because they don't see a trumpet player anywhere in the football league. There's no, I don't know if there's any live bands anywhere. I'm not sure. There might be like a Dixieland band at the New Orleans Stadium, maybe. But they look at me, they look at the Longhorn, they look at the flag. One of the greatest moments of my life was while we were in London, hilarious. I'm standing there in the tunnel, and the players are kind of coming out to warm up, and I'm just standing around talking because there's nothing to do. And Phil Rivers, the quarterback for the Chargers, he's just standing there. He looks around, he sees me, doesn't say anything, cracks a smile, comes over to me and gives me a fist bump, and you know what he's saying. He goes, and you know what he's saying. God damn, we brought the trumpet player with us? He did not say it, but he didn't need to say it because he had a smile on his face, big giant smile. I go, yeah, it's me, Mom. You know, it's me. He goes, we brought the damn trumpet player. That's how fun that was like. That fist bump was worth $1 million.
I'm not insightful enough to be a movie critic. Maybe I could be a food critic. These muffins taste bad. Or an art critic. That painting is bad.
I'm so disgusted by Rick Tittle that I find him very intoxicating.
All right, that's fantastic. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. Tuesday, hour one. That means our friend Karen Lyle is in studio with us, and it's for Sail Sport Talk. Let's bring in our next guest, is a very accomplished sailor, and it is Bill Martin and skippered Stripes, which is a Santa Cruz 72 to a class win and the overall victory on the Cove Island course of the Bell's Beer Bayview Mackinac Race. How big is the Mac, Bill?
Well, good afternoon. It's great to be with you. And there's two major sailboat races on the Great Lakes every year, the Bayview Mackinac, which is sponsored by Bell's Beer, and the Chicago Mackinac Race. They both end up at the same place, an island, and so it's a race to the party on the island. And all the sailors really focus on those two races and prepare for it. It's kind of the highlight of the year for us.
So you just won this race, and explain what an overall victory is.
So in the Bayview race, there were 260 or 70 boats, and they range in size from 27 feet up to our 70-footer. And they're all handicapped based on their size, their sail area, which is their horsepower. And a lot of years, small boats are the overall winners. Other years, large boats are the overall winners. And so that's how they compute who the overall winner is. And this year, we won over a sister ship to our boat. And by the way, our boats were built in Santa Cruz, California. They're called a Santa Cruz 70.
Yes, good boat.
Yeah, they're great boats. And I've been racing my boat for 31 years, but we've obviously updated it multiple times over that period of time. And the handicap system is pretty darn fair, because you will see a mixture in the top 10 boats, big boats and small boats.
So I know you were the AD in Ann Arbor. Was that in the Schembechler years?
No. I started in 2000,
okay.
Kind of the same year I was president of the U.S. Olympic Committee. And exited in 2011, and I was very sad to see the coach I hired in basketball, John Beilein, move on to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Ouch.
Recently. But I enjoyed being athletic director. I didn't intend to do it. It was an accidental job, but it was supposed to last 6 months, and it turned into 11 years.
Well, Beilein was a great hire, there's no doubt. But so you're not the Harbaugh guy then?
Well, I helped at the front end to bring him in.
Okay.
Yes, I did. He's a friend, as is his family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was time to bring back somebody that knew the culture of Michigan and was really a part of the family.
So for you, you know, you think about, I know we're getting off sailing here for a second.
Oh, it's all good.
We'll get back to it. But, you know, people measure Jim about, you know, if you beat Ohio State, or, you know, you go to East Lansing and beat the Spartans and Notre Dame. Is this the year you think you get maybe a championship to the big house?
It better be. I think it will be. We've got everything together, and I candidly, and look from a hindsight perspective, and think we've, on the offensive side of the line, we've been a lot too conservative in our play calling. And Jim's fixed that. He's brought in a new offensive coordinator that's a more wide-open guy, more passing. And I think you may see, actually, a lot of different guys over the ball that's taking the center handoff, because we've got a lot of talented quarterbacks, and I think you're going to see more than just one out there.
Well, Bill, on your team for the Santa Cruz 72, how does your trimmer handle all those shifting winds manually, or do you use some electronics to assist with that?
No, you're not allowed in the racing to use any outside power for your boat. So that all has to be done manually. But the lines that are attached to your sails go around winches, and then those winches are manually cranked by one of the other crew members. We have a crew of 13 on the boat, so I always say we're bigger than a football team. And there's two or three maneuvers on a boat that require absolute perfect coordination, or you can really mess them up, particularly in a long-distance race where it's blowing hard and it's at night. We're really focused on safety and sailing offshore. In fact, I begin every one of my crew meetings before a major race by going over our three objectives for that race, and there's safety, fun, and win in that order.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows it because we've had in the Chicago Mackinac race over the last 5-6 years, three people die that went overboard.
Mm.
So it's something that everybody takes seriously. The officials and the sponsoring clubs are very concerned about it. So everybody at night wears a personal flotation device that if they were to accidentally fall overboard, automatically opens up, lights flash off on them, and we know how to get back to them. But even so, that's very difficult to do.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Bill Martin. A few more questions for the former Michigan AD and USOC committee president as well. Is there something that you learned in this race that you never did before? Because I would imagine that if it's kind of like baseball, you go to the park and they always say you'll see something you never saw before. And more times than not, that's true. So how active do you have to be as a sailor to not get it too comfortable with like, yeah, I've seen it all?
You haven't seen it all, and there's many lessons that you have to relearn. The first afternoon of that race, the entire fleet experienced a storm that came through that brought really torrential rain for several hours and big, big winds. I would say, based on my experience, the one thing I had relearned before this race and was bound that I was going to do is when we knew that storm was coming, an approximate time, we reduced our sails. We reduced our horsepower. We made the boat comfortable that if we got hit by 30, 40 knot winds, we knew we could handle it and we'd all be comfortable and we'd be in control. So I think that's what experience teaches you is, you know, really don't push it that hard when those conditions get so vicious because, you know, you can always recover from them, but you got to get through them first. And several boats had major problems that hurt them throughout the race as a result of not reducing sail before the storms hit.
Well, the winds can come up pretty fast sometimes when you don't know when you have a squall, right?
Absolutely.
And so when that happens, if you haven't reduced your sail, then you're going to be laying over on your side in the water.
Exactly. And you know what the beauty is of sailing as a sport, particularly racing? Every time you go out, the conditions are different. The competitors are different. The wind is different. And you can't see the wind. You can see the waves, but you don't know what the wind's going to do. And what I really like about sailing, and I love to play a lot of different sports, except golf. I've never learned that, to my frustration.
Yeah, me neither.
It's one of those four-letter words, right?
Absolutely.
It's a sailing is a lifetime sport. You can take it up at any age, and you can do it at any age. You can just change your equipment. When you're young, you use very athletic boats, as you'll see in the Olympics, where they're out on a wire, and it's very gymnastic-like. Where as you get older, you can get boats that are a lot safer for you to sail, but you're still out sailing. And so it's one of those classic lifetime sports.
We interviewed Malcolm Page recently, and since you were the U.S. Olympic Committee president, what do you think of the direction today for the U.S. Olympic laser sailors?
Well, for the laser sailors, that is a tough class for the U.S. to be competitive in. Too many other countries nationally support their Olympic programs. Understand that in the United States, the U.S. Olympic Committee gets no support directly from Washington, even though we report to Washington. Washington created the U.S. Olympic Committee in 1976 by an act of Congress. But we get no support in Canada, in Great Britain. They get significant support for their sailing Olympic program and a lot of the other Olympic sports. In the United Kingdom, the Olympic effort is sponsored by a national lottery. So we have to raise money ourselves, and we don't have the same base, the same number of sailors in the laser and some of the other classes that the other countries do. So we have a tough time competing But I think the one thing that I think everybody should keep in mind about the Olympics, we have two objectives in the Olympics. We want to win the total medal count, and we want to win the gold medal count. When I was president for the games when they were in Athens, I said we wanted to win 100 clean medals, meaning none of our medals would be taken away from us for doping. And secondly, we wanted to win the gold medal count. And we did. We won 106 medals, and I can't remember how many in gold. But it's hard for us to do it. But what has really helped the United States in continuing to dominate the Olympics are our women athletes. And why are our women athletes able to do it? Because of Title IX, which came into existence in 1976 and forced universities to up their varsity programs for Olympic sports for women. And that's been the basis of our success in the Olympics. The women win far more medals than the men.
Last question for you. Coming up in Tokyo, the next Olympics, thankfully baseball is back. I think the Japanese had a huge push there, but skateboarding
and
is
softball.
In. Softball's back as well, you're right. But they got skateboardings and rock climbing, surfing, and there's talk about maybe getting esports or competitive video gaming. What do you think about the new sports coming in?
I can't see esports. I can see a lot of the other sports because we evolve over time as to what sports globally everybody wants to play. But remember, the Olympics are a global competition, and you got to ask yourself how many Africans are involved in rock climbing and so forth. Well, it's a very difficult position to be in for the International Olympic Committee to decide. But many of those sports will come into the Olympics by what we call demonstration sports, mm-hmm. where they may try them for one or two Olympic Games and see what the response is to it. The other thing that I really don't like, but I do like, is that so many of the Olympic sports are now being shaped so that they're a made-for-TV event. They can fit in a time slot. They can easily produce the video coverage of the events. That's how sailing has changed in the Olympics, simply to be able to cover them better. So there's a lot of pluses and some that I really don't like, but, you know, it's the way society and sports are evolving today.
There's Bill Martin, the former Michigan AD and USOC president, and just won the Cove Island course on the Bellbears Bayview Mackinac race. Bill, thanks so much for coming on, and thanks for your insights. And we threw a lot of questions at you. We appreciate you rolling with them.
Hey, no problem. Have a great day.
Great to talk to you.
All right, and Karen, as always, thanks for the guest. Thanks for coming in, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, we will.
You're not going to the Virgin Islands, or
I go once a year.
Okay.
All right. I'm really just an ordinary folk there.
All right, thanks, Karen. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.
It's tough. You're never gonna get my love.